You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your Frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on.
You ain't heard about we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.
Cause yeah. You know it's on.
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Colleen Wolf, a host for NFL Network who works Thursday Night Football, a number of NFL Network shows, a native of Philly, and just all-around friend of the podcast. Colleen Wolf on Cut to It podcast.
What did you daydream about when you were in high school?
Well, when I was in high school, I was a figure skater. So, wow.
See, I got it out of her. I knew I could get it.
Yeah, that was it.
Anyway, she doesn't like to talk about
Nancy Kerrigan swag.
Nah. Yo, I was more of like a Tonya Harding gal.
No. I threw the alley.
No, yeah, I started skating when I was like 6 years old, and I loved it, and I got really good at it. And so I skated before school. Like, I would get up at 4 a.m. and go to the rink and turn the lights on, and like, it was great because if you were the first one at the rink, then you could choose the music, and that meant like TLC was on.
Can you imagine this little skinny little girl ice skating to TLC?
To Red Light Special.
Red Light Special.
Oh, yeah.
And 4 a.m.
Right.
In Philly.
I'd be so confused.
Yeah.
What is going
on? And like, mind you, I like cut all my hair off too. So I was like, I had this like short pixie cut, and my coaches were like, you are way too much of a tomboy. So they sent me to ballet classes because they were like, you need to learn how to be graceful. So they were like, you have the athleticism, you can land these jumps, like you have all of, like, the power, because I was like I was all legs when I was skating. Like, all I wanted to do was skate faster than everybody, jump higher, spin better. Just like, I mean, I was fueled by anybody else that was on the ice. I was gonna outskate them. And then my coaches were like, yeah, all that's great, but your like presentation sucks. So they were like, here's a bunch of dresses. And of course, like, that triggered me because I was like, why do I have to wear dresses? And they sent me to a ballet teacher. And I had to take all of these like serious ballet classes for years. And, you know, it ended up, I guess I got more graceful, who knows. But when I was in high school, that's all I thought about. Like, I would skate before school, after school, competitions. Like, I didn't take gym class because I got credits for going ice skating. Yeah, I was really in it.
Did you enjoy any other sports?
I ran track for a little bit. my freshman year of high school, but then it was kind of in conflict with skating, and my parents were spending a lot of money. I had a choreographer at one point. Like, it was so, I mean, it's ridiculous when you look back on it, but like the price of skates, you have to get them custom made. You have to buy the boot and the blade separately. You have to take them to special places to get sharpened. I mean, it is a lot. And my parents would take me at 4 o'clock in the morning and sit at the rink in the freezing cold and just watch me skate around.
So, all right, let's skip over that part. That's too much, dog.
I know. I was very intense. Anything that I do, I just lock in.
Let's talk about your TV career, because okay. A lot of people, like, I get the opportunity to work.
I was gonna say, I don't know that everyone knows that you guys are co-workers on NFL Network.
Yeah, we're co-workers. This is Colleen Wolf. She's the host of NFL Network.
You guys work together on Thursday Night Football.
Rising star. She can host anything. Mm-hmm. She loves sports. She knows about sports. But you didn't always have the confidence that you appear that you have the confidence now. And see, I use that keyword, appear. She does a lot of internal dialogue that we're going to get into later. But how did you get your shot in broadcasting? And when I say broadcasting, I'm not talking about TV. I'm just talking about in the business.
In the business of
broadcasting.
Well, this was like something that I had no idea I even wanted to do. This was not like, oh my God, I want to grow up and be on TV. Like, that was not really the thing. Like, I was going to go to art school.
You want to go to art? Yeah, I was going to say, what was it then?
Yeah, I was like, so in confused. High school, I was into figure skating and art. I was really cool.
And she wears contacts, so I'm pretty sure she had glasses.
I wear contacts.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just saying she said she was really cool. Art. And ice skating. So I'm like, you know, she's super smart. So I'm just throwing it out there. She makes being intelligent cool. Oh,
gotcha.
Well, thank you. Look, listen, nerds run the world. So I loved art, and I was like, okay, I applied to all art schools. I was going to go to school for either illustration, graphic design, or art education. And then, like, last minute, I decided to go to Drexel in Philly, and I had an applied to their art school directly. So they were like, okay, you can't take any art classes this year. Just do something, you know, as take all of your electives this year, reapply, and then you can start your art program next year. So they were like, just take something like communications. So I was like, okay, great. And I was like, this is really easy and kind of fun. At Drexel, you go to school for 6 months and then you work for 6 months, and you do that three times. So you get to have three internships, like three co-ops. And so when it came time for me to do my first one, because I stuck with communications, I was like, this is pretty great. I'll just, you know, do some art stuff on the side. So it came time to do my first co-op, and through Drexel, all they really offered were really lame ones, like, you know, working in pharmaceutical like marketing spots, and maybe you can get a job at like QVC or, you know, Home Shopping Network. And I was like, all right, I don't really want to do that. But my dad doesn't really follow sports, has never really been a big sports fan. But he was friends with one of the women that was on a sports talk radio show in Philly, radio in the morning. And so I got an internship there just randomly. I was like, I don't know, that sounds like a fun thing to do when you're in college, work at a radio station. Mm-hmm. So I went and I walked in, and my first day I saw these four people that were on the morning show, and their chemistry that they had together. They were having so much fun. They were talking about sports. They were like ripping on each other, and it was such a great atmosphere. And I was like, oh, this is exactly what I want to do. How do I do this? What is the course?
It was Thursday Night
Football.
That's
what it sounds like, for real.
Exactly.
We're getting molded for it.
Yeah. How it started, how it's going. Exactly. Like,
you had a meme and you didn't even know it. So
I know.
It sounds like you fell in love with maybe the atmosphere, but you largely, it sounds like you didn't have the most interest in team sports. It was, you fell in love with that atmosphere being at that sports station.
I loved the atmosphere and I was competitive, but I hadn't like unlocked that yet in terms of like other team sports. Like I played softball growing up. And like I said, I tried to run track for a little bit, but that's not like a team sport. And it wasn't until when I was in high school and the Sixers were in the playoffs with Iverson and like Dikembe Mutombo and Eric Snow. And randomly I stumbled upon one of the games and I was like, I started watching the game and I was like, oh my God, this is so interesting.
She was channel surfing and said, oh, what is that big guy waving his finger saying, oh, no, no, no.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, my God, wait a second. And I started listening to the announcers and it was like in the middle of the series and I'm watching and I had no idea what was going on. But I was so intrigued by it. And
so living in a bubble in Philly.
My family was not into sports. Like we did not. It was not a house where there was football on Sundays. Like it just. That wasn't how I grew up, which is wild now that I think about it. I every time I go, like, you know, on Thanksgiving or like, yeah, on Thanksgiving, I'll go home and I'll be like, you know, why isn't the TV on? There are games happening. What are we doing here? Like, everybody get it together. So when I started watching, you know, more games and getting into more sports, and once I started working at the radio station, I was like, oh my God, I gotta really like figure this out. So this is like super embarrassing. I went out and I got basketball for dummies, football for dummies, baseball for dummies, hockey for dummies. And I read all four books and took notes. And I, every single day, would read the sports section on like philly.com, which was like the Philadelphia Daily News and Philadelphia Inquirer. And I just like, little by little, I would watch the games and I started and listen to sports talk radio station all the time. Once again, I just like locked in and became obsessed with trying to figure it out and obsessed with kind of like winning almost at it. And it's like, how do I become the best at this? And I just, it was ridiculous. Like I was in college and I was doing this internship where I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go and do the morning show. And, you know, thinking back on it now, it's like, it was almost like it replaced figure skating for me. It was something I needed and I latched onto it just like I did skating. And I made it every part of my life. And then I just, from there, as I started to understand it more and more and talk to more people about it and ask questions and learn and listen, I started to finally kind of break in, and I got a lot of jobs behind the scenes, and then that sort of led to the stuff on camera.
What were some of your duties in the beginning that you had to do?
Oh my God, like, you know, you're getting coffee for people. I remember, so Hugh Douglas was on the show a couple days a week, and he was like in the building where the studio was. There was in the garage like a car wash on one of the levels. Uh-oh. And he was like, hey, can you take these, like during one of the breaks, hey, can you take this down to the guys for my car? And I was like, sure, no problem. And like, I thought he meant like drive his car down, and it was a Bentley. And I don't even know if he knows the story. And I got in it and I was freaking out. Like it didn't occur to me that I could just like drop the keys off to the guys down there and they would like drive it down. And I get in and I was like, oh my God, how do I work this machine? What is this? And it was so, and I remember like doing the turns in the parking garage to like get down to the next level. And I was sweating so much. And I remember the steering wheel just being so heavy. Like it was so hard to turn because I always had total piece of crap cars growing up.
That ain't a key.
I got back like 45 minutes later and everybody was like, where the hell have you been? Like in the beginning, when I first latched on to that morning show, they would have me go out and do ridiculous bits and then call into the station with it. So one of the ones I remember the most is when T.O. was having his contract dispute when he was in Philadelphia, they had me go to this city corner. It was at 5th and Market. So it's like a busy intersection in Philly. And this was when T.O. was like, I don't have enough money to feed my family. And so they had me set up this giant, they like brought down this big giant plastic kind of container, and I set up a collection for Tio, and I had a like Salvation Army bell, I wore a sandwich board, I had like a megaphone, and I basically, people were coming by all morning long, they were throwing their lunches in, they were throwing like pens in for him to sign a new contract, somebody threw some type of like a lubricant in there for him, there was a lot of really interesting things that ended up popping up in the collection for Tio.
I've been an intern before, but I ain't never, ever had to do no stuff like that. That is, wow.
I think that's worse than the, I always use this as an example. It's probably bad, but man, it's my podcast. Who cares? So around tax season.
Oh, the Liberty people.
Yeah. When they got the Statue of Liberty guy, who generally looks the same complexion as me sometimes. Right? Oh, no.
It varies on where the Liberty tax place is.
It does.
It varies.
Yeah, it varies. And I always, when we drive by, I look at my kids, I say, you don't pay attention to school, that's what your ass is going to be doing right there.
Now, were you getting paid? Were you getting paid, or was this for college credit?
So for me, it was, no, my God, none of the internships I had were paid.
That's
all unpaid work.
The kicker is, the Liberty tax guy gets paid. Like, when you are unpaid, because I worked for the Charlotte Hornets. I was an unpaid intern. So they have you do all that crap. You got to go get coffee for somebody. You got to run stats. You got to go run stats to the coaching staff. But what she's having to do, like having to get embarrassed.
Listen, ooh. I mean. Colleen,
but it's worth it.
Colleen, you didn't even know this. G used to work for the Hornets. And his job, for a little bit, he would give at halftime the stats. Not to Bernie Bickerstaff. Not to Bickerstaff's son.
JB. Yep.
Not to JB Bickerstaff,
not to Larry Brown.
He got to give Michael Jordan the stat sheet. So his life wasn't that.
I was saying I had nothing like you did,
no. Right? But she was basically dressed up like a Salvation Army kid, or
getting lube thrown at her.
Yeah.
That's
yep.
Bad.
Yeah,
they had me do the most ridiculous stuff, and I was like, whatever, I don't care. Like, if we're gonna get a laugh out of it, let's go, let's do it.
But it obviously it puts something in you and ingrained something in you to where you're like, you know what, I want more of this.
Yeah, it became addictive, and I think it's because that adrenaline that you get when you're on the air, when you're doing a show, like for me at that point, as a, you know, college kid, I was calling into the radio station, but they were on, you know, I was on the station that, you know, my friends were listening to, and just being in that moment, the rush that you get, it's such a high. And I think that's what I loved so much about it, was the high from it. And it was like, it was something that, you know, once you're done the show, it kind of sticks around too. So it's just like a really euphoric feeling. And I love it.
We have to take a break. And more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. You got check.
I love Cut To It. And I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth,
let's start at the base of a massive waterfall.
Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million black businesses initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Jay Billis, an NCAA analyst for ESPN, former player and assistant coach for Duke University, and the author of the book Toughness. Jay Billis on the Cut to It podcast.
Growing up in Rolling Hills near San Pedro, how did it shape your perspective on how you see the world today?
Well, I mean, I think I grew up in a little bit of a bubble, honestly, where, you know, I went to, if it weren't for basketball, I think my view of things would be colored differently. Basketball took me into so many areas of Southern California. I used to play, you know, I used to go play pickup at Carson High School and at Narbonne and all these different places. And, you know, so I got to know a lot of people that I wouldn't have gotten to know otherwise. And so it was great for me, and it was a sort of a worldly experience, I thought. Mm-hmm. And then it obviously took me all over the world. But I think when you grow up, like the place I grew up is the peninsula juts out from the coast a little bit. So the truth was, nobody went to my area unless they had a reason to be there. It wasn't like a pass through area. So you could get a little bit sheltered, and basketball took me out of there, because I played every weekend from fourth grade through high school. Every weekend I played out of town somewhere. And during the week at night, you want to go get a game. And so you'd go play pickup wherever there was a good pickup game. I mean, I was at Venice Beach playing outside, or, you know, I mentioned we'd go to Carson High School, all these different places, and play. And so I made a lot of friends doing that have been friends to this day. So that was what sort of opened my eyes to the way the world was, more so than anything else about the area I grew up in.
So who introduced you to basketball before you became this top 50 recruit, averaging 24 and 14?
My mother wanted me out of the house. So she had, when I was in third grade, she'd read something in the local paper about basketball tryouts for the local, you know, little bitty league. And so she took me up there and kind of pushed me out of the car, and I tried out for the league. And I thought, okay, well, the way it works is, you know, you get to fourth grade, you get picked on a team and you play for the little Lakers or whatever, the little Celtics, and you play at your high school, or you play at the local high school every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I wound up making something called a conference team, which was basically a travel team. So we played 40, 50 games a year, and we traveled for all of them. So we would play all over Southern California, and we'd pile into the coach's car and one of the parents, and they'd drive us to games. And we played sometimes on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'd play in three different tournaments. And it got to the point where we would start a game with our full team. And in the second half, like at the end of the third quarter, half the team would go with one of the dads and go start the next game. And then when the guys finished, they'd hop in the next car and go meet them and finish the game. But we played, sometimes I'd play nine games in a weekend. And I played, you know, we all were team, you know, all our teammates, we wound up playing in high school together. So we played hundreds of, you know, a couple hundred games together before we ever got to high school. And so we knew each other really well and hung out and every weekend. And that was really fun. I learned a lot about things just from doing that. And it was all just because, you know, I my mom wanted me out. And I, from the first time I dribbled a ball, I fell in love with it. And I played baseball too, but I didn't love baseball like I loved basketball. Yeah. And that's sort of where it came from. And that was like, that was all my parents needed to keep me in line, was if I ever did anything that got out of line, they were like, all right, you're not playing. I would do anything to keep playing. So I actually did what I was supposed to do just because I wanted to keep playing ball.
Well, you said you lived in a bubble. So is it safe to say your perspective on all the different cultures that you experienced going into the different areas of Southern California, it really helped you to where, you know, I mean, I find it interesting and I know you, but yet find it interesting knowing your playlist of rap music. Did that have to, did that start with the integrating of cultures and just hanging around
so cultured now.
Yeah. To just hang around different kinds of people.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think the sort of the rap music thing was more, you know, things that were popular at the time that caught our fancy more than anything. I mean, there's a big difference in appreciating Black culture and understanding Black America and what, you know, what Black Americans have gone through and are going through now. And I think that's, in my view, that's the biggest disconnect in the conversation we're trying to have now, where people sort of understand that, no, it is not, systemic racism does exist. It doesn't mean that everybody is racist, but there are racist policies that we still live with and that shape our society. And when, you know, I don't know, Steve, if you'll remember this, you were younger, but when I was a senior in college, I was a classmate of Len Bias, played at Maryland.
Yeah, I remember when that happened.
So when Len Bias died, I think it was 2 days after that, a famous football player named Don Rogers died exactly the same way. And I played against Don Rogers' brother, Reggie Rogers, played basketball against him. He wound up going to the University of Washington, played in the NFL too. He's a great athlete. So when Bias and Rogers both died of cocaine overdoses, that's when Congress came up with all of these federal sentencing guidelines.
Yep.
And what people probably don't realize today is so much of our prison population is made up of low-level drug offenders.
Yep.
And they're predominantly African American. And that goes back to sort of that book, The Color of Law. Like, those are issues of law. Those are not issues of people deciding to live in an area and self-selecting. That's not what that is. And I think having people understand that, that's a hell of a lot different. Understanding that is a hell of a lot different than understanding, you know, and having an appreciation for what Jalen Rose likes to call people who love Black culture, you know. So appreciating hip hop and rap music, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That's a lot different than understanding the system we live in and how it is slanted toward white America and slanted against minority America. And it's not just African Americans, but it's predominantly. Yeah. And it's our unwillingness to have that conversation, I think is the biggest hurdle we have to get over, I believe, as a society, that we have to honestly have the conversation rather than when there's an issue of police brutality, somebody asking the question of, well, how many white people were killed by cotton? No, that's not the question. That's just not it. And we're having, I think, as a society, a hard time of addressing that honestly. And until we do, we're going to keep going in circles on this. I really believe that.
Kudos to you, Jay, for acknowledging that and leading us towards the conversation, because that's the biggest part.
Well, and that's the, when you say root cause, like I always try to look at when you're thinking about the end result and why are we getting this result, you have to go to the origins. And so what are the origins of these laws? What are the origins of these issues? And until we understand the origins of things, we're not going to understand why we're getting the end result. And so when there was recently some changes in the criminal justice system, while you know you applaud the changes, one of the questions I had was, well, why aren't we letting out the low-level drug offenders that were subject to these unjust laws in the first place? Like, haven't they served more than their time? And let's remedy those past wrongs in addition to
exactly.
If we're going to decriminalize it going forward, let's acknowledge that we made mistakes back in the 80s that have perpetuated to this day, and let's right those wrongs too. And for some reason we have an unwillingness to do that. And you know, look, we have an industrial prison complex now that, you know, privatization, there are so many issues that go with it, but until we're willing to look at the origins of things that acknowledge all of the systemic issues, then we're going to continue to be arguing over, you know, some of these end result things. And I get, honestly, you know, you're having tough conversations with your friends over the last several years. And you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, rather than people feeling defensive about it, like I don't feel like just for myself, I don't feel like I need to feel guilty about things, but I need to feel responsible about the world we're living in. Yeah. And so accepting the responsibility for the way things are is the only way we're gonna take steps toward making positive change in the future. So I'm, you know, I don't think anybody is asking white America to feel guilty, but they're asking for responsibility to be accepted and to be understood so that we can change. And I don't see where that there's anything wrong with that.
I love this conversation, and I want to take it a step further and really just talk about some of the things that you've done. You are an outstanding analyst, a broadcaster for ESPN and just basketball. And obviously your knowledge of basketball exceeds my miniature knowledge of basketball, which is I am a true fan. I'm a fan of basketball in the way of I'm not going to comment. I don't think about can this guy play or not play. I just watch.
You just enjoy the
game. Just enjoy it. I'm not going to tweet, oh, this guy can't shoot. Yeah. I know what a guy can't shoot looks like. He's sitting on the couch.
Right.
But, Jay, you've been extremely outspoken, and I am alumni and very heavily involved in my college, University of Utah, and I've seen the way the game of collegiate sports has changed, but I've also seen the good and the bad. I mean, these kids are coming out where it doesn't matter what school they go to now. They can go Division I, they go Division I AA, Division II. Every school to some degree has a sponsorship by a shoe company, right? And I mean, I've seen some, and even some of the gear I get, I'm like, this is ridiculous. They backpacks, socks, shoes, jocks, underwears, t-shirts, beanies, scarves. Yeah. Like now the mask that we have to wear, it even has the logo of the school. We both are a little bit long in the tooth on sports, but we both have been around it enough to see the metamorphosis of collegiate sports. Where do you believe, obviously in basketball, where do you believe collegiate sports is heading, good and bad? Now, I know journalistically, that was a no-no. I asked you two questions.
Double barrel.
Double barrel. But what do you think it is right now, Jay?
Well, the way I view it, Steve, and I got involved in this stuff on the policy side when I was in college. I was a member of the NCAA's long-range planning committee when I was a player at Duke. So I spent 2.5 years on that committee. And the NCAA probably regrets having me on because I learned how policy was made. And while at the time I had some pretty strong opinions in committee rooms when the meeting was over, I didn't go out and voice my disagreement publicly because I didn't think that was appropriate. And also you knew what got rewarded. So I wasn't going to step out of line. But now that in my job's to, you know, not only analyze a game, but it's analyze the game and the policies that surround it and that drive it. And so my view is, college sports is no different than professional sports, except the only difference is that the players are enrolled in school. That is the only difference. It is sold the same way. It is marketed the same way. The players, to your point about apparel contracts with the school, the players are unpaid billboards for sneaker companies.
Yeah.
And now when you were in the NFL, you were a paid billboard. Yeah. So, you know, the NFL has an apparel deal for a time. You were probably with Reebok and Nike, all these other things for the uniforms and the gear, before you were with the Ravens, the Panthers, you were wearing Panthers gear and maybe it was Reebok logo on it and all that.
With the Panthers at the time, I think it was in between Reebok and Nike. So Reebok had it first, Nike, but then my apparel deal, I was with Reebok for 10.5 years. My own personal deal, I was with Reebok for 10.5 years. And then I switched to Under Armour.
Yeah, So you wore you had a shoe deal so you could wear what you wanted on your feet.
Correct.
But when you were in NFL, in your team activities, you wore your team issued gear that had the Reebok logo or the Nike logo, whatever it was at the time.
Correct.
So by virtue of the fact that you were a paid employee of the Panthers, you know, you were a paid billboard for the NFL gear, and then you had your own deal for your shoe. And then on your off time, you were wearing Reebok or Under Armour, whatever it was at the time, right, and paid directly by the company.
Mm-hmm.
So the players now, people sometimes look to your point earlier about the amount of gear they get. Some people will look at what the players get.
Yeah,
it's a benefit.
And so they get more gear than we got when we played.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look at it as what they're allowed. Like, it's not like the university says, well, here's a gift certificate to Dick's Sporting Goods. Go get whatever you want. They don't say that. They issue them this gear and they have to wear it.
Yep.
They're not allowed to wear anything else because the school is contracted to wear that. And in fact, when I was playing, you were playing in college, if we had covered up the logo on our shoes for a game, if they call that spatting, if we had taken tape and covered up the logo, the university was required to give back money to the shoe company.
Yep.
We were unpaid billboards. And my thing, the contracts for media rights deals, for television, ancillary rights, internet, whatever, all those are exactly the same. NFL, college football, NBA, college, they're exactly the same. Exactly. The only difference is in what the players are allowed. And so every once in a while, when I say, hey, college players are exploited, people go, oh, I wish somebody would exploit me like that. And I said, no, that's not, you're not taking that the right way. They're exploited in that somebody is using them to make money while at the same time limiting what they can make. That is the textbook definition of exploitation. Doesn't mean they're mistreated. It means they're exploited. Those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is, if they're old enough to sell for billions of dollars, they're old enough to share in the revenue. And the NFL players, NBA players, they have a union, they negotiate with the league and they're paid, they get a percentage of basketball related revenue, whatever that is. And people go, well, the NBA has a salary cap. It's a lot different to say the players get a scholarship only. And boy, the NBA players are limited to 51% of basketball related revenue. That's a pretty big difference in treatment. So my thing is, when people say, well, we don't want the college football to be a minor league for the NFL, you don't have to worry about that. It is not a minor league. Minor leagues don't make billions of dollars and have multi-billion dollar television deals. College football and college basketball are major league sports. Mm-hmm. They're major league. They stand on their own. Now, what the players do afterwards, nobody says that college football and college basketball are minor league systems for coaches. So when a coach, when Pete Carroll jumps from USC to the Seahawks, nobody said, well, college football shouldn't be a minor league for coaches. You know, they don't say that because it's major league. And it should be major league for the players, and they should be allowed to share in it, because every other student, there's no restriction on what a normal student can earn or accept. Like athletic scholarships aren't the only scholarships that are provided. Right. Regular students are on scholarship too. And yeah. Nobody tells them, well, you get a scholarship, therefore you're limited to only that. Only an athlete is told that. And I think that's wrong.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Mike Garofolo. He's got over 20 years experience covering the NFL, works for the NFL Network, and a native of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mike Garofolo on the Cut to It podcast.
Where are you from and the place you call your hometown?
Well, I'm from Philly. I mean, I used to walk to the Vet, Veterans Stadium. The Phillies games were dollar general admission. So you could go to a game for a dollar in the middle of the, and those were the cheapest seats, and you'd sneak your way down, obviously. And then they went to the World Series in 93. And the price went up to $5, which is a 500% increase, or is it 400%? I never get that right. But regardless, it was an increase that was a lot for a 14-year-old. That's my neighborhood. I wouldn't change a thing about where and how I grew up. I loved growing up in the city, in a neighborhood that was tightly knit. I learned a lot of things on the streets and on the playground. That you don't learn in school, that you have to learn life lessons. And I would never change a thing.
Tell us, like, what did you learn in the streets?
Well, when I say it that way, you start to think like, you know, the streets, it ain't the streets.
I knew what you meant, but I just took what you said and roll with it.
I figured I cut you off at the pass before you went there.
I knew you wasn't slanging dope, bro. Chill out. I just meant you said you learn stuff in the streets, on the playground.
Mike Young Jeezy Garofolo.
Yeah. Hey, what's your name? My name is Mike, but they call me Mike Mike. you got my cash? Right. No, I'm not talking about that. No. I'm just talking about really, you know, sometimes people will say the streets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you know now as parents, right? You can't have your kids hanging out with all kids because some kids will pick up cursing, will pick up bad habits from other kids, other places. So that's what I meant more as a parent perspective, not like, oh, you know, Mike Garofalo's a thug, like none of that.
Well, and this is something that my daughter's just turned 3, so we're not there yet by any stretch. But this is something that I wrestle with because I learned a lot. I the most that I learned in life was by doing dumb stuff and making mistakes. And so, you know, I want to sit there and kind of tell my daughter along the way to not make the, but I think you have to in life.
Well, they're going to make it. We were in break earlier today, and my son Peyton is one of the staff was asking, Sarah was asking, how is Steve as a dad? And he was like, oh, sarcastic. He was like, oh, he was great. You know, but we're just talking about how parenting and my style and all that stuff. And he made some mistakes, but it's really cool now seeing him 22, 23, kind of life is starting to evolve for him. Mm-hmm. But you got to kind of allow them
to fall flat on their face.
Yeah, but it's tough as a parent. Like, you don't want them to. Like, I'm like scared for him to fall on his face.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm scared to admit. Like, I worry. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, man, he could, you know, even just him dating people. I'm like, oh, I gotta choose the right one, get a prenup, don't bring no scallywags home. You know, just my mind just goes down a rabbit trail. To the point of like, if he ever brings a girl back over to the house, I'm literally like,
scallywag.
I'm like, what's she do? What her parents do? Where she live? Well, you know, what's her favorite color? All that stuff that I sabotage in my mind. Like, I ain't gonna like her.
Yeah, you're already going into it with a preconceived notion.
My preconceived notion is she ain't good enough.
Yeah. Look at you, dad.
I'm so territorial.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like to the point is like, look. If they ain't serious, don't bring the ass up to the house. Just straight up. You know, don't ask to come on no vacation. Hey, if their last name ain't Smith, don't ask me. Shh. I don't care.
Yeah.
So I get it, bro. And your little girl's 3. I only got one. If me and Angie had another child and it was a daughter, run me over.
Yeah, the daughter's a different man. And I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you.
We're a month away from number 2.
I know.
I told you that, man. Yeah. We got 2 coming.
Yeah.
So, Mike, tell us about your family dynamic. Growing up.
My family dynamic. We were a family of 5. I had an older sister and a younger brother, all with extremely different interests, but we were still tight. I was really the only sports fan. My mother and I were the only sports fans. No, that's not true. My sister a little bit, but mostly my mother and me, into sports in the family. My brother and father, not so much, which was weird, right? Like, you're supposed to learn sports from your dad and all that stuff and all those stereotypes. No, that's not how it was in our family at all. And my brother was 3 years younger than me, my sister 2 years older. We had my parents just celebrated their 46th wedding anniversary yesterday.
Wow, congratulations. Wow.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You have a tight family. Where is your family's place of origin?
Nationality, which I don't think that's the word. Is it nationality or is it heritage? Is Italian. My great grandparents were born in Italy. My grandparents were born here. And we've been, both sides of the family, been Philly all the way. I don't know why they settled here or there, excuse me. I'm up in North Jersey now. See, that's the fun part of it all is my sister moved, when she got married, moved 5 doors away from my parents. My brother, when he got married, moved across the playground. I moved to North Jersey. You'd think I moved to, you know, Russia, the way that they reacted. I mean, I'm only an hour and a half away. Relax. We're not that far. We're not that far away. Yeah, we're still a very tight-knit family.
We're used to having, you know, we'll have sports folks, but we want every aspect, every dynamic of sports. We've had Colleen on here, and now we have you. And I love having you on here because it's a different perspective, mm-hmm. right? You love sports so much that you got involved into it. So take us down that road of how your career began.
You know, I knew my athletic ability was not going to take me to places where they actually pay me money to play sports. So I think I made that determination early that I pretty much knew exactly what I wanted to do. Whether it was,
how did you know exactly what you wanted to do?
Because I would watch the broadcasts and see what the reporters or announcers or analysts would bring to the table and say, yeah, I like that. That's cool. I always loved kind of putting on a show when I was a kid. I kind of liked the notion of what went into it and, you know, how these guys brought their information and let it out on national TV. So I kind of
didn't know that. I like that.
Yeah. I appreciated it from afar. And then I got to college and my father said to me, well, why don't you check? Because everybody was doing internships. Oh, I'm going to do an internship here, an internship here, an internship. I said, okay. There was one for, they called them producers, but basically they were board ops and engineers who ran the board and answered the phones for WIP radio in Philly. We would answer the calls and get the calls. We would basically run the whole show. I answered the ad. They called me back. I had an interview. I was a junior. I was going into my second semester of my junior year.
At what college?
At LaSalle University.
I had to refresh your memory on television.
I got you.
You're letting your fans not hear the important part.
I have fans?
Yes, you have all three.
Now you're going to get some after this.
Yeah.
There we go. That's why I'm doing this.
the mess up thing that Steve said. Nah.
We mess with each other all the time. You know what Garofalo does really well?
What's it?
Plays victim. That's why he giggled too. He plays. Oh, yeah. You're yelling at me. I get more fans every time you yell at me.
Man, people take it so serious. I'll get a tweet. Man, how you let Steve Smith do that to you? I don't know, man. That was pretty bad. Why don't you follow me?
People take that so serious, though.
Like, they do.
Y'all have, like, with anything, like whether it's you and Steve or whether it's Steve, when you on with any of the guys on Thursday night, like that's always the public response is they don't like each other. Like,
yeah.
Just tell us, man, relax.
Which is good and bad. Like you want people to be into it, but you don't want people to be too serious and right. Recognize a joke for a joke. But you know,
so we just mess with, like, he literally will say, hey, I'm gonna say this and we'll be in agreement.
Yeah,
I'm like,
already talked about it before.
I'm like, I'm gonna say that was dumb.
Yeah.
And he's like, these great. Yeah. Okay. Now, some of it has been authentic BS.
For sure.
Like, we got in an argument on TV that's
going to be Ryan Tannehill.
So, we're in the green room, Good Morning Football Weekend on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Ryan Tannehill doesn't play well, and he literally says in the green room, this is now, you usually got in after me, so... What, this is like 5:45. Now I've eaten my breakfast, my waffles with my syrup. And he comes in and he's like, oh my gosh, can you believe how piss poor?
Why does he have a British accent?
I don't know. And he's like, Mike goes, they look like a high school team.
Oh, I remember this.
I flipped my lid. I'm like, what? Yeah. He's like, yeah, high school team. I'm like, all the damn practice they have.
Yeah.
And then I was like, see, that's what's the matter with you reporters. Had the index finger. Oh, too.
And then all of a sudden you weren't in the media anymore.
Oh, yeah.
all of a sudden,
your role. I just took my mouthpiece out of my mouth. Like, he's like, what? You know, what? I'm like, that's BS.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's not. You seen how they play? I said, yeah, I've seen some high school games. Uh-huh. I've been to some Friday night games. They don't look that good. He's like, no. And what does he do? He doubles down.
Yeah.
We go
on air.
And said it. And I said the same thing, except
it was live.
Oh, I was hot. And he thought the second time I was going to be less animated. I was hot.
He thought you got it out on the ground.
I was hotter because I was like, oh, you're going to try me on TV too. Bro, it's just like some of the stories we have.
But listen, don't think that you say it like I expected that, oh, I'll get you in front of the cameras and I'll never do that.
I wasn't saying it like it was a gotcha. I just meant as a former player and then as an analyst, I mean, as an insider, we have these conversations, good and bad, that goes from his journalistic point of view. I'm part of that journalistic point of view, but also as a former player's point of view. And we kind of battle between the journalist's information and how he takes it and dissects it. And then how that comes across as a former player in which why reporters and players sometimes have this friction.
Right.
Right. Because the reporter's like, I have to explain it. Like I'm talking to my 80-year-old grandmother. And the player's like, first of all, your 80-year-old grandmother isn't watching the game.
Right, she ain't part of this demographic.
Yeah, so it's always this dynamic that we go through. It's pretty interesting, though.
Gotcha.
Well, so just to be clear, we're not going to spend a ton of time. We'll go back and forth on all these things. But what I was saying was, not even toward the players, by the way, I was saying their offense, they weren't stretching the ball down the field. I don't even remember what team it was, but it was like,
I don't either.
There were no passes over 10 or 15 yards. And I said, that was like a high school offense. And we still got into it. And I was like, well, I'm not saying that they look like high school players and they're not playing hard. What I'm saying is you can't play that way. And he didn't care. We were into it by that
point. But I wasn't the only one though, was I?
I believe Mike Robb may have backed you up. Was it Mike Robb?
Yes, you had some backup.
No, but it was – Mike is different, and I'm learning – not Mike is different, but I'm learning in TV the perspective of a beat writer or the perspective of an insider. Mm-hmm. And they're all about information. And players, we're all about process.
Yep.
And when those two are on television, they don't operate the same way. It's like a
different perspective.
I don't mean to sound this in a mean way, and I'm not saying he's the man or the female, I'm the man or female. It's literally Mars and Venus, husband and wife. It just, we don't see it the same. Uh-huh. We literally see it totally opposite, right? He sees as, oh, that cup is half full. I see as, no, I'm still thirsty.
Yeah.
Right? It's so different.
So let me tell a Tannehill story, because that's another illustration of what you don't do, and Steve will call you out for it on national TV. So I'm at the Dolphins training camp practice in middle of July. It's like 90 degrees and humid as all hell. Sun's beating down on me. I'm off camera while they're practicing at 2 p.m. for some reason. Like, it's not like I do a morning practice or late afternoon where it's nice and cool. And Steve's somewhere else.
I was actually in Canton. It was hot as fish grease.
Okay. I say, you know, I'm talking about Tannehill, and I'm referring to the year before when Gase had to back it down with how much he fed Tannehill, how much he's allowing him to do at the line of scrimmage. And I'm saying, you know, what Gase did was strip it all the way down, and now he wants to rebuild it. Because you got to remember, this is a guy that's used to the way Peyton Manning did things. And I'm telling you, Steve's yelling, get him on camera. I want to see his face. Meanwhile, the sweat is just pouring down my face. I was enjoying the fact that I was off camera. I'm dying. And now I come on camera, schwitzing and looking horrendous, probably making it look even worse that like, oh, Steve's calling him out and now he's melting on camera when really I was just hot because of the heat.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't you ever put Ryan Tannehill's name in the same sentence with Peyton Manning. And I said, no, I wasn't compared. I don't care. You don't. How could you? And I heard about that for months and years. I think I'm still hearing about it.
Yeah. How did it work out for Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill that day?
Touche.
Hello? Is this thing on? Hello?
I didn't. Again, I don't know how many times I got to tell you. I'm not telling you that he was going to play like Peyton Manning. I am telling you that Gase was used to a certain thing. Listen, if anything, I was highlighting bad coaching, right? That he was expecting a certain level of Peyton Manning from a guy who wasn't Peyton Manning.
Well, hey, is
I like the way you compiled that narrative.
Hey, is Adam Gase a really a good coach right now? Because he ain't doing
well. Maybe the Jets, among others, should have seen the writing on the wall. How about that?
That's a whole different conversation right now.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team, Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Lebrecht, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.